podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Jones! Bowden!
He's got it! England have won the World Cup by the barest of margins!
Stokes flashes it away through the covers for four, and England have won the match!
Hello, welcome to the Analyst Inside Cricket, a glorious Sunday morning all over the UK, probably anyway, certainly in Manchester and undoubtedly in London, and yet there's no cricket, well, no test cricket anyway, because for the second time in a row, we've had a three-day test. The only difference is that South Africa won the first and England consummately polished off the second with a bit of time left, actually, even on the third day. A remarkable turnaround, Simon. And, well, I suppose it's a shame for those spectators and viewers who had lined up today to watch the game and get excited about a Sunday of a test match, the second Sunday in a row that's been blank, if you like. But I guess we can glorify in the fantastic turnaround by England.
Yeah, brilliant performance by England. The writing was on the wall, though, at lunch on the first day. I mean, we felt it at the time. That first session, absolutely crucial. Could South Africa get through to lunch? Could England knock over four or five? They knocked over five. And from there, there only looked to be one way this test match was heading. And you know, going into this third day yesterday, seemed to me, if England can knock over Elgar and Avia reasonably early, then, you know, how could South Africa possibly get the runs that they needed to put some pressure on England in the fourth innings? And England did get Elgar and Afia relatively early inside the first 40 minutes. South Africa battled away, but England just had too much. A first innings lead of 264, you know, normally those are good cards to have in your hand.
Yeah, one has to marvel at, you know, some of the bowling, actually, as well. I mean, Anderson, again, defying age. Stokes with that immense spell in the middle of the day. Those two stand out for me in particular. How was it from your point of view?
Well, the thing is, I think the pitch by the third day, it was never a belting pitch, this. But, I mean, you could dig in, you could score. I mean, and as Stokes and Folks showed the day before, but there was enough there. There was a bit of variable bounce. There was enough spin for Jack Leach to... I mean, he didn't take any wickets, but he was able to give control because it wasn't easy to score off him. And England got the ball reversing. So, it was a real handful for South Africa. And once they lost those two early wickets with a massive deficit of 264, it was hard to see them surviving ultimately. And in the end, it all went pack of cards time. But England bowled really well, I thought. Robinson was excellent with the new ball. Anderson was really good, consistently good throughout the test match. Leach, steady. Stokes, just from where does he get the energy from? I mean, it's just incredible, that spell either side of tee. And the ball he got rid of Peterson with was an absolute brute, which actually, is a bit of Stokes and a bit of the pitch as well. Just emphasise that the pitch just had enough there for the bowlers throughout. I think it underlines actually how well that Stokes batted the day before and Ben Folks as well. I mean, cricket is such a psychological game, though, isn't it? Once you start to get on top, or as they did yesterday, 2 days ago, when you get a lead, it just sort of eats away at you as a bowling side, 50, 60, 70, 80, and the pressure of the game just completely changes, and England were able to just make the most of the pressure that they built up early in the game, and it told yesterday. I see, Yoz, actually, your piece in the Sunday Times this morning. You're not projecting ahead to the Oval. You're projecting ahead to the Pakistan series. And your conclusion was what?
Well, I did that because I think two reasons. One, the high-performance review that Andrew Strauss and his team released the other day highlighted England's seamers abroad and the deficiencies of them. And secondly, also, I felt the Old Trafford pitch was quite like a Pakistani sort of pitch where they're going to encounter, or what they're going to encounter in December in test series there, a three test series there. And so I just sort of tried to project forward a bit, and it fills me with alarm, really, that those pace bowlers that are still injured that could be so invaluable in Pakistan, because I just don't see an Anderson or a Broad or even a Robinson taking wickets there. But I have to think that but I certainly conclude that the Stokes will. And it's amazing, actually, that this review highlights the differences, the differentials in England's seamers at home and abroad. And obviously that means primarily Anderson and Broad and Wokes as well. And the fact that they average, in the 20s in English conditions, but in the 30s, basically, everywhere else. And yet, interestingly, Stokes, his performances at home and away are almost identical. He has, I think, something like 92 wickets at 31.2 at home and 92 wickets at 31.5 away, something like that, roughly. And it's amazing, isn't it? And, he is a classic overseas type bowler because he uses basically the short, the bouncer ploy. He goes with a bit of a sort of short ball barrage for a while. And then he goes with the reverse swing, which is what you get a lot in overseas conditions. And he likes bowling those long spells. And it's funny, actually, people saying, oh, how the hell does he do it? How does he keep going? But actually, when you're in rhythm like he was and you're enjoying bowling because, there's something really very satisfying about reverse swing in particular is a type of bowling which is quite easy to control. Once a ball is reversing, you know roughly what it's going to do, whereas conventional swing is a bit more fickle. And so actually it can be really fun manipulating a batsman round the crease, bowling the odd short ball. And that sort of just emboldens you. It invigorates you and you want to keep going. And actually I remember, I remember bowling a spell in county cricket at Headingley, actually. And I bowled 34 overs, more or less, in a row. And it was broken up a little bit by, obviously, intervals, lunch and tea, and there was a rain break as well. But when you're on a roll and you're taking wickets, it doesn't feel exhausting, actually. You want to bowl more. And, of course, the classic example of this is the match which was mentioned on Sky, actually, on telly, during Stokes' spell, the great performance of 1980, Ian Botham in the Jubilee Test in Mumbai, where he scored 100 and bowled both innings about 30 overs, including 26 overs off the reel in one innings, took 13 wickets in the match and scored 100, and basically drank himself sort of silly in the night as well, because he was with, they'd imported some, it's a silly story really, but they'd imported a load of beers from Australia where they'd been on tour, and they knew that they weren't, at the time, 1980, Indian beer wasn't the best, so they imported a load of Castlemaine 4X or Foster's or something to India and kind of basically drank that at night. So it was an extraordinary performance, but the point is, when you're on a roll bowling, you can keep going if you're that type of person.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, when you're in rhythm. Well, Stokes was certainly in rhythm yesterday. He must be absolutely exhausted yesterday evening. And because also captaining as well. That's sort of the mental exhaustion you get from captaining. Although it was only a 3-day game, so we've had much anticipated series. You only had 6 days. At the 10 days cricket, just on that Pakistan and the comparison with this Old Trafford pitch, one thing I would say, it seems to me, just from looking at Pakistan pitches from a distance, I think they're a bit more consistent, slower, lower. This Old Trafford pitch had a bit of capriciousness about it, so I think England would be happy to see a dry pitch like this in Pakistan, although, of course, Pakistan have got a bowling threat, rather than some of the pitches that Australia and Pakistan played their test series on. But I sort of get your point. And actually, I think England, when they beat Pakistan at Old Trafford during lockdown, I think they were slightly peeved at the fact that the Old Trafford pitch was a bit like a Pakistan pitch, and they actually found that they thought the victory there over Pakistan was a great triumph because they felt they'd beaten Pakistan in Pakistan-like conditions, albeit it was at Old Trafford. So, yeah, there is that analogy there. With that Pakistan tour, I mean, coming up, we did say, there's a lot to happen before then, but we're on the subject, so let's continue it for a moment. At the start of the summer, I think I felt good luck taking wickets in Pakistan in December. But then again, I didn't see England coming up with 5 victories in 6 test matches this summer. You know, I thought it'd be a real struggle for them after what had come before, West Indies and Australia. But there's no doubt it is a rejuvenated England side. And with, you know, perhaps with Stokes to the fore at the helm, then he can sort of galvanise England for a really tough test tour in Pakistan. You know, it almost seems like almost anything's possible. But then, of course, there was the memory of last week at Lord's, where England got absolutely pummeled by South Africa. So, you know, it can swing dramatically one way or the other.
Yeah, I mean, it seems odd perhaps to project as far as December, but in a way, it's logical because the World Test Championship is next summer, and if England are to get into that final, then they do need to win virtually everything from now. And obviously they've now got the chance to win this series, the South Africa series with one test to go. Then they've got Pakistan in December. So, you know, it is kind of part of their schedule and part of their mission, I suppose, to make sure they do. And they do compete in that series in Pakistan. And it's one of the focal points of this general high-performance review. How can England be better overseas? Definitely. There have been so many issues to consider. And one of them, of course, is spin. And, you know, it still worries me also to see Jack Leach being so ineffective. I mean, he's a very steady bowler, but he just doesn't seem to pose problems. I mean, even Simon Harmer, who I know didn't have a great match, particularly for South Africa, but you can just see batsmen being more uncertain when he bowls. He deceives them with pace, with flight, with the odd ball turning, with just different trajectories and things. But to me, Leach just doesn't ask enough questions of good players. He can get the tail out and, you know, he's not going to let you down, but I can't see him taking wickets in Pakistan. And that does worry me a bit. People talking about, will Adil Rashid, will Moeen Ali, you know, come up and agree to tour and play a part. But, you know, they haven't played test cricket for a while either. So that's going to be a problem for England, actually.
Yeah. Well, it does seem like a potential problem from this distance. In this test match, you know, it was a dry pitch, and Dean Elgar, everything from South Africa was predicated on the fact that they thought the ball would turn, that, you know, later in the game, and it was going to be a spinner's pitch. 4 wickets for 204 runs, so 4 wickets at 51, and the seamers 25 wickets for 514 runs, so 25 wickets at 20.5, a huge disparity. It probably underlines, well, 2 things. It underlines the fact that the game finished in 3 days, and spinners generally speaking more effective 4th and 5th day. It also underlines that hunch, that feeling, well, and I think the stats would say it as well, that in England generally it's the seamers that do it quicker than the spinners, that, you know, they're able to get their wickets quicker, that the spinners can give you, they can hold an end, they can build pressure, but they only really become effective later on in the game. And actually, perhaps on a pitch like this, well, as it showed on the third day, that, you know, in England, seamers can be effective throughout a match, whereas spinners probably have to wait a bit longer in a game to get involved. Dean Elgar was saying in his post-match interview that, yeah, they sort of, it was about getting through to lunch, 2 or 3 down. They said those, you know, those 2 wickets that we highlighted, those 2 Stokes wickets, those golden arm wickets he took, absolutely killed them just before lunch on the first day. And it felt like it at the time, and so it proved. It's funny, actually, sometimes when you can, sometimes games are unpredictable, aren't they? As indeed we've had this summer, actually. I think, you know, most of the cricket this summer has been unpredictable. Some games you can just, you can just predict exactly almost what's going to happen. We don't always get it right, but I think on this occasion we did.
And the other thing I think is important about that test match win is how not only Stokes' performance with bat and ball really emerged, but also his captaincy. I thought that, you know, it was obviously not a risk exactly, but it was a slightly left field choice in a way. If you think back 2 or 3 years, Ben Stokes, captain of England in Test cricket, even though we have had Trevor Bayliss on our podcast last week saying, yeah, he nominated him as a potential captain way back, and people kind of laughed initially, but he was serious. But I think that just watching him captain, obviously there are inevitable comparisons with both of them, Flintoff, and because of their prowess as cricketers and obviously taking over as captains. But I don't think they had the same empathy with players that Stokes has, interestingly. Maybe because of all the things he's experienced in his life, which, of course, his documentary released on Friday really kind of hones in on. But it's all those kind of different experiences which have helped him become somebody that can understand different personalities. It was always a bit of an issue with someone like Ian Botham, because he was a brilliant cricketer, obviously, and a fantastic man, but he didn't really understand failure or people fearful or worried about not performing. And, you know, he didn't get that. And Stokes does, clearly. You know, he was the guy that during the World Cup in 2019 fronted up and said, look, I'm worried we're going to get knocked out here and I'm fearful. And all the other players really invigorated them, because it made them sort of look at their own personalities and kind of face up to their own fears rather than park them and put them aside. So I think Stokes is a very interesting and intriguing character who is able to understand different players' needs and, you know, kind of pressures and so on. And that really helps when you're in the field. And I just think also he's just got such a good cricket brain that he changes things quickly. He doesn't leave a bowler on interminably when they're not being effective. He tries things. I mean, he started with Joe Root on the third day and gave him a couple of overs. It didn't work, so he changed it around. You know, he changed bowlers at different ends. He experimented. He tried different field settings to try and encourage bowlers to manipulate the batsman around the crease and so on. So I just think he has a real great command of the intricacies of the game and the personalities involved.
Yeah, I think there is sometimes a danger, isn't there, when you compare cricketers. It's inevitable to compare Stokes with Botham and Flintoff because of the impact that they have on matches. But actually, it's wrong to compare characters and think they're going to be the same type of captains or create the same vibe or whatever in a dressing room. I think that can be a big mistake. You know, everyone's an individual. And also, I think where there's a difference between Stokes and Both and Andrew Flintoff is Stokes, you know, he is actually quite disciplined, isn't he? I know he's had his problems off the field, but he's has become an incredibly disciplined, focused cricketer. Whereas, you know, Both was never a great trainer, was he? And I think Freddie was, you know, he trained hard at times, didn't he, Fred? So, you know, they're actually quite different characters. So it's a mistake to see them as, you know, a sort of one amorphous mass, if you like. And I agree. It's interesting. I agree with you about Ben Stokes. I think the way he handles Jack Leach is quite interesting, because he gives the vibe off, I think, that he really believes in Jack Leach. Whereas when Joe Root was, say, you know, in Australia, you just look at the field that he gave Jack Leach. You just felt that he didn't really believe in him. And, you know, it was so easy for Australia to score against Jack Leach. There were sort of no problems posed, whereas at least with Leach bowling on this Old Trafford pitch, you know, he had we described it on commentary sometimes, you know, he's got like an under 11 field at times. Yeah. You know, where he had mid off up, you know, sort of level with the bowler. And you know, you don't see that in Test cricket. Yeah, basically, and it didn't happen the whole time. Just every now and again, saying, "Go on, have a whack over the top. Go on, tempt you." Whereas you can imagine sort of Joe Root would have a long off in. And I think, you know, it's been documented this summer, isn't it, that Ben Stokes said to Jack Leach, "You know, you're not having a man back. You're not." You know, someone like Graham Swan, of course. I mean, that would have been a Barney there, because Swan, he loved to have a man back, but he was a very different type of bowler. So it's been interesting to watch this summer. It's fascinating, isn't it, how the start of the summer, or after Joe Root stood down, you know, there was this debate about who should be the next England captain, and people sort of were a bit sceptical about the possibility of Ben Stokes, at the same time as sort of realising that, you know, there was no one else. I mean, people went through the card, it could be him, could be him, could be him, but actually, oh well, ultimately there is only one choice to be England captain, and well, so far so good. you never quite know how the future is going to pan out. I mean, it all could go horribly wrong. But it's been great fun. It's fascinating to watch it this summer.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to go horribly wrong. I think he's, you know, mature enough now to understand the things, the mistakes he made in the past and what he can and can't do. I mean, there's been one or two stories knocking around, hasn't there, about the ECB executive who he told to F off when he wanted a selfie with him and things like that.
But that was back in 2019.
2019, yes.
Yeah, 3 years ago.
Yeah. So, you know, there'll probably be some other stories that emerge from the documentary. But I thought all along, actually, for the last 2 or 3 years, I thought he was a really good captain, craving to get out. You could see him all the time, very animated on the field, talking to Joe Root, suggesting things, pointing at stuff, occasionally taking over when Joe Root was off the field temporarily. I felt some people are just natural leaders, and that doesn't mean they want to jump out of the trenches and everyone kind of follow them. It's more about sort of showing the way forward and directing traffic and managing players and so on. And I think he's someone who was a natural captain, just waiting to emerge. And also, that spell, we should just say, that spell in the afternoon on the third day just broke the back of South Africa, and it left a bit of work to do because they were only five down when they took the second new ball. But it just completely undermined South Africa's will and separated that stand between Peterson and van der Dusen, and then the rest sort of fell like a pack of cards once England took the second new ball. But it was Stokes who'd done that sort of hard digging, and then Anderson and Robinson just put the roof on.
Yeah. I would say hats off to Rassie van der Dusen, though, for coming out with that damaged finger. I mean, he's out of the last Test match, but goodness me, he gritted it. He battled away. He showed great determination and grit. And that was no surprise when you saw him bat at Durham in that extreme heat early in the summer, that one day international when he made about 130-odd, and it was roasting hot, but the point being that he had to run most of his runs because he couldn't find the boundary. I mean, I sort of sensed that, there's a tough cricketer in there. And South Africa, without him in the last Test match, okay, he hasn't scored a huge amount of runs so far in this Test series. No South African has, actually, and I think that's, a potential problem for them. But they'll miss that. And so Ian Mulder has been called in, who's actually been in a very good form for Leicestershire. Excellent form, tremendous form, stunning form in the One Day Cup. Whether he'll play, I'm not sure. Talking to Vernon Philander yesterday, he thinks Ryan Rickleton will come in. But who knows before that Test match. And I sense one player who will be back in, Yoz, is Marco Jansen. Yes. Marco Jansen as well.
Yeah, that was nuts to leave him out. He would have bowled well on that surface. It would have been made a big difference, and obviously he can bat as well, and just that height, no one else even sort of approaches his height in either side. And well, I suppose Broad isn't far off, but it was just insane to leave him out, I think, especially how well he'd done the previous Test. So South Africa did get it wrong. So we've got a week and a bit now to consider for people to have the rest of their weary bones. Not that they've been out on the field all that long, I suppose.
But exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So but you always feel tired after a Test match, even if you've only bowled six overs. It's the intensity of the game that, while you're in it, the adrenaline keeps you going. But as soon as you stop, everything hurts, especially as a bowler. So a week off for all the players. And then off to the Oval. And what a great climax to the summer. What a fantastic summer of Test cricket it's been, hasn't it? And we've got this sort of decider to look forward to now at the Oval in a week and a half's time.
Yeah, brilliant occasion. Let's hope the weather plays ball. It's been such a wonderful summer weather-wise as well, although, obviously there have been one or two downsides to it with the lack of water and all that sort of thing, which, we might struggle with as time goes on. But for cricket, it's been, fantastic, hasn't it? And you hope for five relatively dry days. I suppose talk about the weather. What you would hope is that when the players get to the Oval for the first day. I mean, normally the Oval pitch is pretty good, isn't it? It's normally, generally speaking, it's a decent batting surface. It's not always a belter, but you know, sometimes there is something there for the bowlers, extra bounce as well. Is that it's not like perhaps really humid, overcast, lights on sort of morning, that there's a bit of balance. You know, there might be something there for the bowlers, but it's not like one of those mornings where you're going to be five down or whatever it is, six down at lunch. That I think that would be my hope for the first morning of the Oval, and that it actually the weather's set for, and it you know it goes 5 days or close to 5 days. The last Test match didn't it? In England India last summer was a brilliant game, and actually going into the final day, you thought all four results were possible. As it turned out, of course, in India brushed England aside, brilliant bowling, Bumrah getting in on the act on the final day. So. Yeah, I think that's the hope, that it's a belting Test match. It does still feel that South Africa's batting is a little bit fallible, a bit more fallible than England's, I think.
And especially now they've lost Van der Dusen as well. That definitely. Yeah. Of course, England will probably keep the same side. So poor old Harry Brook, unless there's an injury in the meantime, Harry Brook has missed out after his amazing summer. And Zach Crawley will keep his place. And I think fair enough. I think he stuck it out well in England's innings. He only made 38, but he showed he was able to really provide or offer a sort of dogged resistance and be selective in the shots he tried to play. I think he's still actually got a slight technical issue. He's still trying to work a ball, short of a length ball, from about middle and off through sort of mid-wicket square leg and getting squared up quite a bit and getting a few leading edges. I think he needs to work on that, sort of work on his left shoulder position a little bit. But, you know, he showed the application there, and that will give him some confidence for the future and just take a few people off his back as well. And Stokes actually mentioned him after the game in interview, saying, you know, the credit he'd earned from that and the confidence he would have gained as well.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, I can't see England changing their side. They did make a change in the bowling lineup for this Test match. It's actually one that you weren't in favour of, Yoz, but I thought Robinson actually bowled superbly in this game, and he got his rewards finally, didn't he, with the new ball, sort of helping mopping up the tail, 4 for 43 after his 1 for 48 in the first innings.
He did. I don't know. There's something about him that I mistrust. I don't know what it is, really.
What about his bowling?
I don't think he quite gets the length right. In the first innings, everyone said, oh, you know, he bowled the most magnificent spells and didn't take any wickets. It was very unlucky. I just think he bowls about half a yard too short, generally. Mm. And it's the same thing that afflicted someone like Mohammed Shami, actually, who looked brilliant constantly and just couldn't take the wickets. And we worked out during during the World Test Championship final at Southampton, that we worked out that he just bowled half a yard too short for English conditions. And he's sort of applied that to his game and tried to bowl a bit fuller when he plays in England. And I think Robinson needs to do the same. I just think also this no ball business is bad. He's bowled 10. I know Andy Zaltzman came out with this stat on radio yesterday, prompted by you and me, actually, that he bowled 10 no balls in his... No, sorry, 38 no balls in 10 Test matches, which is a lot, really, and contrasts with Anderson 46 no balls in 174 Test matches, which is actually more than I thought for Jimmy. But still, it shows that is one no ball for every four Tests, whereas Robinson is four no balls for every one Test. So that's not good. And although it might seem like a minor thing, he's already taken a couple of wickets with no balls. And I think it's just it speaks of ill discipline. And I was a guilty party. I bowled lots of no balls, and it was due to ill discipline. And, you know, people say, why do fast bowlers push the line so much? Well, you get into a habit and bowl in the nets and in practice, you overstep, you get into a rhythm of where you think you need to take off and land, and it's hard to change that. And so when you're doing it in practice, you then got to obviously come back a tiny bit in a match, and you tend to judge your takeoff point from where the umpire's standing. Well, you don't have umpires in nets or practice, so that's why you tend to be ill-disciplined in practice, but you've got to be disciplined to make sure you don't push the line too much, and he's still doing it. And I just think that's a bad mark. And it sounds hypocritical. He is a good bowler, but there are little things he does which could be significantly improved.
Yeah, yeah, I hear you. I mean, defenders of Ollie Robinson might say, oh, hold on a second, this guy's played 10 test matches, he's taken 44 wickets at a, you know, just over 20, and also he's got a huge swag bag of wickets in county cricket as well, which actually pushed him into the England team, didn't he? At sort of relatively late age, it was his performances in county cricket rather than sort of through. You know how some bowlers are identified at quite a young age, or you know this guy's got something. It was his county cricket that caught the eye. So it seems quite a strange thing to say that he bowls a bit too short for English conditions when you think how successful he has been in English conditions.
Maybe I'm totally wrong. It's just an impression.
No, I'm not. I don't think you're totally wrong. I think there's a grain of truth in what you say, and you know, perhaps that the penny has dropped and will drop because you know he's got himself fitter, hasn't he? I think you know he's just looked a bit more.
Yeah, there was a bit more zip. There was a little bit. I noticed a couple of times during this test match, he did get the speed up to sort of 85, 86. Still, his sort of standard speed is about 82, but I think he was just upping the ante a little bit, which is good to see.
Mm. Well, we talked about Pakistan at the start, didn't we? I presume he'll go to Pakistan. The test will come. You know, can English bowlers bowl well in overseas conditions? I mean, that will be another big test. I'm not sure the Australians were that convinced by Ollie Robinson in their conditions. A big challenge ahead. But before that, the final test match of the summer at the Oval next Thursday. You know, big crowds, so the weather plays ball, and let's hope we have more than a 3-day match, unless it's 180, plays 160, plays 200, plays 190. Do you know what I mean? An absolute nipper, you know, one team wins by about 15 runs. Those sort of low-scoring games, or short games are acceptable, but I don't think we want games as one-sided as we've seen in the last two matches. But we can't complain too much this summer, Yoz, because we've seen some absolute belters of games, sort of one against the head by teams coming back. But this game and Lords was not a team coming back. It was a team taking a grip of the match early on and not releasing it. Sort of boa constrictor cricket, if you like. And so it's 1-1 with all to play for.
Yeah, well, we're looking forward to the Oval. We'll have an interview for you during the week leading up to that test match. But in the meantime, hope you enjoyed it and thanks for listening.
Podcast Network.